Thank you for members of the public for coming to the meeting today. Are we back on the stream yet, John? Okay, it's the Pacifica National Board meeting reconvening on Saturday, February 23rd. Thank you. Sorry, losing days here. At 2:30 p.m. exactly Eastern. What is that, 11:30 Pacific. Summer Rees, Chair Pro Tem, Tracy Rosenberg, Vice Chair Pro Tem, and Richard Uzel, Secretary Pro Tem. I don't know. I guess we should call the roll just to make sure everybody's back, but seems... Brian Edwards-Teekert, you're back. All right, we need to do this. Is anybody missing? Are we missing anybody?
Yes.
A couple of people.
Heather's not here.
Okay, but they're... Yeah, they're all present. We presume everyone will be shortly taking their seats. We sure do. Okay, so we have public comment. And again, members of the public, thank you for joining us. And we can start calling people up to address the board. And the first speaker is David Combs. I'm sorry, Janice, did you have something to say before? Yes, sir. And feel free to adjust it, the height, so that it's comfortable for you.
The height is okay, but can you hear me?
John, he'll make your mic hot. Hold on. Yes, Margie.
Is it on? Now it is.
Oh, now it is. Okay. One moment, sir, please.
I'm too sorry. Much.
One moment, sir. Margie? Yeah, and we have more speakers than yesterday. Nobody adhered to time limits yesterday. I would probably have to enforce that. Well, 2 minutes is what we did yesterday, and people spoke on average 4 to 7, but I counted the people, and there are more people today. So I will ask each of you to stick to 2 minutes, please. Sure. Three? Is that a suggestion?
Yes.
That's a compromise,
yes.
And I'm fine with that.
Yes.
Okay, three. But then please be respectful of your other members of the public who wish to speak.
Can you have a no?
Yeah.
So at 2 minutes, you'll see there's 1 minute,
okay.
So you can wrap up.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Combs. Go ahead, please.
I'm from New York. I listen to WBAI. I'm on the finance committee here. Been so since it started a long time ago. I figured that after the World Financial Center and City College stint, you guys are going to sell the Signal, maybe even close the station completely. Why? Quote, if those WBAI bastards, maybe in the biggest radio market on the planet, keep failing year after year after year after year, pulling down the rest of us, to hell with them. That's what I figure you guys are saying. But I say, it's not WBAI who caused all this problem. It's you guys on the PNB and past PNBs and the executive directors. Here's the point. WBAI programming has been destroyed. 10 hours has been made available from 10 o'clock to noon, 5 days a week, prime time, really, to music, which brings in zero. Furthermore, there's been a complete screw-up and the programming schedule, moving very good programs to after midnight, and some of them off the air completely. Now, if those insane ideas and deeds were due solely to the station manager and his program director, such as he is, then you, the PNB, or the executive director, would have stopped it. Right? You guys would have stopped it. You didn't stop it. So it must have been from your command, that's how I figure it, that he did it. About new listeners, no station manager in the last 12 years, that's my history with WBAI, has done anything useful, nothing, or effective in getting new listeners to the station. This has to be the PNB's doing or incompetence by not forcing the managers as having their number one or their second job, besides keeping a Signal on the air and good programming, getting new listeners. I have a proposal. Keep Berthold as the manager. He keeps the blood from flowing down the halls because, with all the hatreds between different groups there. Now, people are going to scream at this one because nothing else is working, so this is extreme. Put Gary Null, yes, Gary Null, in charge of programming. Left programming. Have you heard any of his stuff on his PRN? It's all left. It's extremely good. He's very good at choosing things. Maybe Gary Null and Steve Brown, two people I know, they don't know anything about what I'm saying here, can pay off the $200,000 for the tower and maybe more, and give them for that complete control of the programming and put me in charge of getting new listeners, but you got to give me all the employees half an hour coming to work and against work going back to hand out things at the subway that I would write up.
Thank you.
And that's the only chance this guy is it's going to keep on going down, 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 costing more money to Pacifica. And
thank you.
Finished.
Your time is up.
Thank you. Don, is it DeBar? DeBar, sorry.
Don DeBar. I was listening yesterday to the stream, and I heard William Heerwagen make a collateral reference to the fact that the corporate charter of Pacifica, that he had heard that it was suspended. And so I ran a search at the Secretary of State's office and found out that, in fact, it is. So I looked into what the implications of that were. And first I found that under California law, that condition is analogous to what we have in New York and call dissolved by proclamation. It's for noncompliance with franchise tax filings and franchise tax payments if the corporation owes franchise taxes. This is a 501c3. That part doesn't apply. But a very basic ministerial process has been not followed that resulted in the suspension of the charter. Flowing from the suspension of the charter is a suspension of the 501c3 status for that duration. And the restoration of that is not automatic, but rather requires a filing upon the completion of the restoration of the corporation with IRS, a certification from the state that the corporation has been restored to viability, and B, listing the duration for which the corporation was in suspension. So it raises the question of what the status of the deductibility is for the people who made donations during that time period. But more importantly, at the time that you were pitching, while the corporation was suspended, and the corporation has, and the officers have constructive knowledge of the suspension, just by fact of the noncompliance with the filing, you are, in essence, A, fraudulently inducing the donations by telling the listeners that they are that their donations will be tax deductible when that's only speculative at best at that point, and B, more importantly, the criminal violations of the Internal Revenue Code for misrepresenting the tax status of the corporation to the public. I'm wondering how that's going to be dealt with after you get the stuff restored. More, there's some other implications here too. When a corporation is in suspension, as they call it in California. Again, it would be dissolution here in New York. You don't have the power to enter into contracts. You don't have the power to appear in court, to answer pleadings, lawsuits, to defend yourself, nothing. You are essentially dead. You have the right to do the following. One, change your name if somebody steals it while you're in suspension because the name is available. And two, prepare the returns that are missing and file them. The third thing that's not listed but that's implied is that you have the power to do wind-up operations if, in fact, you're going to let the operation go. Now, this operation instead has been conducting all of the normal business. In California, when you restore the corporation, all of those things are restored retroactively. But the things that are not are, one, the fact that you were pitching while you had no 501c3 status and representing that you did, in essence, and two, the donations that were made during that time, they're also in a gray area. I don't know how long this thing lasted, but I saw in your 990s for 2011, for example, you took in $13 and change million. So if it was over the course of a year, you might be looking at $3-4 million worth of tax liability for the people that donated. If it was a longer period than that, perhaps even greater. And finally, the things that you're working on right now that are urgent, like contracting, stipulation, whatever, to preserve your ability to broadcast in New York City, while you're doing that stuff in suspension, later, if the other side doesn't want to honor that contract, it's voidable at their option.
Thank you.
So you guys have a lot of work to do. Just one last point. You came in 4 years ago holding up a three-day notice that ended up having Bernard White and Tony Riddle swept out because he represented them as being somehow incompetent. This is an urgent and existential example of incompetence.
Thank
and
you.
How do we get a remedy against you?
Okay. Thank you. The next person is Mitchell Cohen. Oh, no, I'm sorry. My name was crossed up. Marilyn Voight, Doug?
Voight Downey.
Okay. Voight Downey? Okay, so I can't
read that. I'm Marilyn Voight Downey, a longtime supporter of WBAI. I want to raise the issue of pledges and premiums. I think that the virtually permanent fund drive mode WBAI is on has really hurt our listenership a lot. It's made it much less attractive and made us less able to attract new listeners. I think this is a big problem. And I want to just say that I have some issues to raise in connection with it, with the fund drives and how they're carried out and so on, that could mean we have less time for fund drives. One is the call center idea. I think that I see why in the expediency of the time we needed to use a call center, but I just want to say that on two occasions, on a Friday when I was listening to Earl Caldwell, and another time when I was listening to Danny Rivera on Sunday, at the end of the hour, I called in to pledge for the premium. They had been pushing for a whole hour, and I was told there was no such premium. So if that happened very often, we lost a lot of money. And I did call once successfully, but it tends to put you off to calling in. So I would say we need to use volunteers, because volunteers care. And a volunteer would have said to me, wait a minute, let me check. But this person said, nope, we have no such thing. Have a nice day, ma'am. That was it. But so then there was one time when Hugh Hamilton was doing the Slavery by Another Name. I thought, well, I'd like that CD. And then I was going to call and I thought, I think I pledged for that once. So I went to look at my scribbled notes of my pledges for 2012. I try to keep notes because I've had so much trouble not getting premiums. There are, comrades, 18 premiums I have not received from 2012. Now, that's okay, because, I mean, you could say it's my fault because I didn't keep track and I didn't contact and I didn't follow up, but I know it's supposed to take a long time, and so I just assume it'll finally get there. Now, that totaled something like $1,235 I pledged I didn't get any premium for. Now, I'm a loyal listener. I love BAI, so that isn't mine. I know it's all for the station. I'll still pledge. But new people might not. When you tell people you're going to send them a thank you gift and you don't send it, that's fraud. Moreover, the tax deductible thing that was just raised might help me understand why for 3 years in a row I've had to chase to get that letter for the IRS. I shouldn't have to do that. Maybe people don't do it. Maybe they just give up, say they're not going to be able to get the letter. I have gotten in the past. I need it this year. I hope I can get it. And the last thing is, I convinced a friend of mine, two friends of mine, to become contributors. And one of them just called me and said she sent a check for $100 that's never been cashed. So she said, I guess they don't need the money. So anyway, I would just say these things are issues that have to be resolved, because we rely on this money. And if we don't carry through with our promises, with best practices, we're doomed as a station.
Thank you. Thank you. Mitchell Cohen.
Hi, my name is Mitchell Cohen. I'm the former chair of the local station board at WBAI. When Hurricane Sandy, day before it hit, Ken Gehl was on the radio. He's the ecological reporter here at BAI, talking courageously, I think, about all the nuclear power plants that were in along the East Coast that Hurricane Sandy was going to pass right next to. And raising the specter, wisely, I think, about what might happen if the hurricane actually caused one of the nuclear plants, especially here in Indian Point, to flood. And should that have happened, and should they not be able to immediately shut down the nuclear power plant, New York City would have been wiped out, and so would have a lot of other areas. And so he was on the air doing that, and then other producers picked up the call to say, call Governor Cuomo to shut down the nuke, call the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and it was like an upsurge. Hundreds, at least, and possibly more people called both of those numbers, and the NRC actually responded by putting people in all the nuclear power plants along the way to, say, to monitor it. I don't know what they would have done, but to stand near the switch or whatever it was. But that just showed some of the power of what WBAI could do and what our listeners could do to reshape what people, to give people, number one, what they could think about in terms of taking power over a crisis, and also how we can act in, within a crisis to change the situation. And I would like to see Pacifica do that on a national level, to reshape the agenda of what's happening in this country, to use all 170 of our related stations, including the affiliates. That's an enormous number of it reaches millions of people. Right in New York, I made that proposal on March 11th and 12th. There's a very, very important conference on nuclear power and Fukushima that's called The Medical and Ecological Consequences of the Fukushima Nuclear Accident. It's at the American Academy of Medicine. It's organized by all, you know, a lot of anti-nuclear doctors and people. And I would like you to want Pacifica to cover that and build programming around that, anti-nuke programming for the 2 days that that's on. And I would love to see that happen. One more point. Also, as a national project to involve it, on April 3rd, Cindy Sheehan is bicycling across the country against the war. That provides us with a great framework to do 15-minute or 20-minute or whatever programs every day around the anti-war movement, around interviews with people, putting people on, debating. Let's make these national projects and put that on the national agenda. We can do that, but we're not, because we're debating all the stupid stuff all the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mitchell. Charlene Deck?
Sure. Dear PNB members, today I want to inform you that KPFK's Interim Director for Life spends a great deal of company time meeting with less than half dozen programmers while ignoring the needs of the rest. He promotes the Ian Masters show clearly in bad investment, since Ian Masters show is not the biggest fundraiser. Why the extra effort? The interim program director has also sent threatening emails to programmers insinuating that those who do not make money will be replaced. Since when does the Pacifica mission call for a money quota in order to be fulfilled? Hasn't anyone told KPFK's Interim Director for Life that the distribution of wealth in the United States is not even, and that white people make the most money, and that a serious effort to reach out to the Latino pocketbook requires promotions, outreach, publicity, and respect? You cannot change... Sorry, I have a spasm in my face. You cannot... I'm sorry.
That's okay. Take your time, please.
Programming without consultation. You cannot change the Spanish language programming hours without consultation and evaluation, and with a clear sign of authoritarianism. Disrespecting Latinos and expecting them to smile and give lots of money to your employer, can you? Apparently, the interim program director at KPFK thinks so. I suggest that Pacifica give programmers the privilege of doing a show in peak hours, when people are driving the streets and freeways in large numbers and they are awake, on condition that they raise the money the stations need. If they don't, then they should be doing the late hour slots where people are sleeping or watching television. I am reading this from my friend and comrade Fernando Velasquez, Informativa Pacifica's program director. And also I'd like to let you know you can listen to Cindy Sheehan 5:30 on Sundays on cprmetro.org.
Thank you. Joe Brown, please.
Afternoon. I want to bring you all back to the basics of why we're here. I think we need to do that to review the last 67 years of Pacifica, founded in 1946 by Lewis Hill. Pacific Commission statement states, to establish a foundation organized and operate exclusively for educational purposes, with no part of the net earnings of which inures to the benefit of any member of the foundation. To establish and operate for educational purposes in such a manner that the facilities involved shall be nearly self-sustaining as possible, with one or more radio broadcasting stations licensed by the FCC. In radio broadcasting operations, to encourage and provide outlets for the creative skills, energies of the community, to conduct classes and workshops in the writing and producing of drama, to establish awards and scholarships for creative writing, and to offer performance facilities to amateur instrumentalists, choral groups, orchestral groups, and musical students, and to promote and aid other creative activities which will serve the cultural welfare of the community. Furthermore, in radio broadcasting operations, to engage in any activity that shall contribute to a lasting understanding between nations and between the individual of all nations, races, creeds, and colors, to also gather and disseminate information on the causes of conflict between any and all of such groups and through any and all means compatible with the purposes of this corporation, to promote the study of political, economic problems and the causes of religious, philosophical, and racial antagonisms. To get to the point, I'm from WPFW in Washington, D.C. We have some management problems down there. We have this lease we're going to work out. We don't want to work out with the Queer Channel people. Okay, 80% of the programmers have sent a letter of no confidence to our management. We have not been acting in a pro-union, pro-labor, pro-democratic way. We've been acting in the opposite way. Anti-union, anti-worker, anti-democratic. Okay, doesn't make any sense. I just read the mission statement. It doesn't gel, does it? Right? Canceling such shows as educational programs for the youth with K2 Nation, Tom Porter, and marginalizing our jazz. Our mission is jazz and justice. Don't marginalize our music. Build it up. So we're asking for better management at PFW. I do not serve in any official capacity. I'm a listener and supporter for the past 35 years of WPFW. And this board has a great responsibility to straighten out not only the problems I've been hearing about here locally in BAI, but in Washington, D.C. with WPFW. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Jim Dingman?
Hi. Thanks for letting me have this opportunity to talk to you. I have been on the Community Advisory Board here for 3 years. And in the old board, I was on the programming committee back in the early 90s. So I want to give you some of the results of what we've been finding out for the past few years about this listenership here. Listenership here, as in all the stations, has plummeted. I have here a copy of a report that was given to the Pacific National Board in 2008, which I would like to give to somebody because there's other things I have that I'd like to share with you all have to do with the station in particular. But that study showed that all the stations were starting to decline in listenership in 2008. I'm also going to give you Arbitron statistics for the station for the past 2 years. They're not totally accurate, but what they basically show is that the listenership, I estimate now, is one-third to two-thirds of 0.1%. Now, that means, and that's true, I think, throughout the whole country in all the stations. So we have to ask ourselves, what is going wrong with the ability to attract audience? And in my estimation, part of it is that the programming has to change dramatically, or else the whole thing is going to collapse. If we had had an audience of about 300,000 to 400,000 people, we wouldn't have had to go through a Monty Python move for the past 2 months. and I will refrain from further comment on that. My opinions are well known. Now, I have suggestions about what we need to do. First of all, we have to have all producers throughout the system get on Facebook, get on Twitter. We have to create alternative broadcasting systems apart from the terrestrial system that involves podcasting, internet radio, blogs. We already have people locally here who have YouTube channels. We have to do all that. I have approached major universities in the New York City area, and they're willing to cooperate and help us if we open up time. So we have to open up time now in the grids, in the prime time afternoon and morning drive and in the evening. One other point to make before I get off is that we've been actually working with drama groups. All the system has a mission to work with drama groups. We brought 10 drama groups into the station for the past 2 years, including all the Occupy Wall Street performance groups, groups that are performing off-Broadway right now. All the stations have to pollinate with mainstream and alternative art, similar to what we saw yesterday in that film with Bob. But that's out there, and that has to be integrated, because frankly, what's going on right now is not having anybody listen to it. Okay, we got to be blunt about that. We have to change it. We have to sit there and figure out what's going to work. And we're not doing that enough.
Thank you. Lewis Wolf, please.
My name is Lewis Wolf. I'm here representing the CSM, the concerned supporters and members of WPFW. I've loved jazz since I was 12 years old. That's 62 years ago. And an earlier speaker said that jazz doesn't raise money. Well, that's, or music, he said, doesn't raise money. In Washington, it's just the opposite. Our music raises money in a serious level for our station. Secondly, I don't understand the thinking of our general manager and some board members who think that it's all right to change our grid, which has worked. I know there's some tweaking that needs to happen, and I agree with that. But it was totally, the way the process was done secretly, where the programmers only learned that their program had been canceled as they walked into the building. What is that? That's not democracy in action. You know, when we think of our station, we think of our mission, which is jazz and justice. Well, we have to practice the justice part every day with our staff, with our programmers, and with our listeners. Our listeners are complaining and, in fact, threatening to withdraw their support if things don't come back to where they need to be. And the secrecy with which we have been faced from our general manager and some board members, to the point that we cannot know what is happening. This proposed move to under the roof of Clear Channel Broadcasting is totally, incredibly wrong. And if it happens, if we are forced to move there, we will be within a matter of months, I guarantee it, and you can write it down, we will be off the air, done, finished, over. We will be history. Our station will be history. So we cannot let that happen. And I'll leave you with the message of one of our founders who said that our mission is to bring the voice, to be the voice of the voiceless. That's what we have to keep up. Thank you.
Thank you. M. Saidi McLaughlin? Call you later. Okay. Pat Logan, please.
Okay. Can I? I'm speaking to make sure that the issue of a network-wide daily Spanish language program is on the table at this meeting, even if briefly. I heard that the National Board recently rescinded the mandate that they had passed that such a program be implemented throughout the network. And I heard, unfortunately, I didn't hear the meeting, but I heard it was deemed to be unworkable. Any policy that we think is important enough and that we is essential to fulfill the mission can be worked on, can be found to be implementable. I think that the Spanish language immigrant community, those people who have recently come and do not have sufficient English to understand complex ideas that they need to know and hear about, they deserve to have a part of our air. We cannot be greedy and say, yes, we only have 168 hours of airtime, so it's going to cause people to tune out and whatever. We have to accommodate these people who have done so much for us by revitalizing our labor movement in the U.S. I urge all listeners who are hearing me of all the Pacifica stations and affiliates to push your program directors and your program councils, which if they're not active as yet, they soon will be, because that has been, that mandate has been passed by the board, to push these bodies to make sure that we have such a Spanish language newscast. This issue is not going to go away because it's too important, and there are others as well as myself who are not going to let it go away until it becomes a reality. Thank you.
Thank you.
Turn away. Turn back.
Good afternoon. My name is M. Saidi and McLaughlin, and I hail from the People's Republic of Brooklyn most proudly. And but that means the People's Republic, okay? And I have been at the station for at least 37 years. My son used to be babysat by Uncle Sidney on the couch at 505 8th Avenue, where we worked under serious guerrilla situations, but we survived. I am not going to say anything different than what all my colleagues say, and I'm sure all you people at the other stations have had the same problems of management, discrimination, gender, racial homophobia, management, strange hiring tactics, nepotism, so forth and so on. So you'll hear that and specifically. But what I want to do is remind you of something, because I think we have lost our way. And I'm going to just read this piece right now. It says, With the conclusion of this capsule history, I return to this moment and the irony I mentioned earlier about working at Pacifica Radio, where audiences are not manipulated, but are often the fullest range of thought and information, where their intelligence, not their pocketbook, is addressed. The dilemma of Pacifica Radio always was and is how to communicate to the listener that if he, I guess in these days she too, is to keep this broadcasting service, it must be his responsibility, that it cannot exist or survive without his support. Many interested people and foundations have from time to time given large sums of money to help it survive one crisis or another, while listener subscriptions were growing toward the point of self-support. But they gave these funds precisely to help this new economic concept, listener-sponsored radio broadcasting. And all these years, and then three stations later, we're still communicating to you. Help provides for yourself this unique broadcasting service, even though you can hear it for nothing. Pacifica uses the radio instrument for the most meaningful purposes it has ever been used, and challenges you to recognize the possible, the responsible broadcasting it made possible only by responsible listeners. And the reason why I read this is because it's from a book called The Exacting Ear. And it's the story of listener-sponsored radio and an anthology of programs from KPFA, KPFK, and WBAI, edited by Eleanor McKinney with a preface by Eric Fromm. It tells the story. And it's my suggestion that we may have lost our way, but there's still some light in the tunnel, not at the end of the tunnel. And so that we should not, you know, this staff, management, listener, you know, we are all that same person.
Thank you.
And we should not forget that. And maybe if we continue to look at that in this new regeneration of whatever, that maybe some turnarounds will happen.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Very much.
Thank you. Ed Manfredonia?
Oh, yes. I've spoken yesterday, but today I want to make a point. It was Sidney Schoenberg and Cy Hirsch. You remember who they are? Okay, they told me to come to BAI. When I wrote that, when I said that, one of the LSB members, not here, said I was. They were straw men. They told me to come. Cy Hirsch said it most succinctly, I believe anything about those fuckers on Wall Street. I thought that was great. Schoenberg encouraged me. He said he can't even get his articles. And he gave me information about the Salzburgers, which confirmed. But to give you an idea of the corruption, which you people talk about, who's an accountant? Who remembers the salad oil swindle? Nobody?
Okay. The what?
The great salad oil swindle. 1963, it put...
Billy Saul?
No. $143 million swindle. Happened in Bayonne, New Jersey. My uncle was one of the perpetrators. He was the second person. He was the cogit. Yeah, he bribed a federal judge. Whenever I go to court, I always write that they hate me. Also, I've written about Chris Christie. Todd Christie, right? You don't know who Todd Christie is. Well, the New York Times lies as usual, said he's worth $60 million. I said he's worth $300 million. So he calls up and threatens to sue me. He is the one behind Chris Christie. Unless you understand, unless you're a trader on Wall Street, you won't understand a lot of things. Madoff started his fund as a tax fraud. Treasuries were paying 12% at that time. He guaranteed 10% no tax. I knew two of the people at the feeder funds. And I gave that information to, I forget, the Picard, and he sent me a letter thanking me. Okay? They were members of the American Stock Exchange, like I was. Okay? Goldman Sachs, I've been writing about Goldman Sachs for years, and they came. A class action attorney used someone to indirectly contact me to offer me $1 million if I continue writing my articles. When I told that to the newspaper, they sent my articles to there, they printed some, and they said, oh, we want you to fund us. Okay? Morgenthau, who has a sterling reputation, okay, and Arthur Levitt are the primary movers of this financial crisis. Morgenthau stopped federal investigations. Kallstrom, the head of the FBI, gave information about Wall Street investigations to the firms that were being investigated. When I met with the FBI on August 29th because of threats to my life that they thought were done by the Russians, they told me, why do people talk to you? I said, because I have no axe to grind. I just want the truth. That's all I want, is the truth out. And as usual, women were raped. There's no way around that. And that's what has to be exposed. Some people don't believe me. Too bad. Hirsch and Schonberg did.
Thank you. Nia Bediako, please.
Good afternoon, everyone. And as Summer said, Nia Bediako. I am Nia Bediako. One second, Summer. Just give me a few minutes to get my...
No problem.
Yesterday, my comment was about, please release me, let me go. Today, it's about, thank you. Thank you for, one, finally releasing me of my responsibility from the foundation at approximately 4:30 p.m. yesterday, February 22nd, when it should have been January 31st, 2013. Number two, for exposing me to all kinds of diverse experiences in the form of directors alleging to know accounting to a few who really did. Three, to lots of wannabe lawyers when there were really only a few real lawyers. Four, to lots of directors not telling the truth, but in reality, there were only a few who actually did tell the truth. And finally, thank you for challenging me and testing me in every sorts of ways, because it still helped me to remain the moral and ethical person that I am. However, I do have to ask you to please do me one favor, and that is to hire qualified leadership, and I put the emphasis on qualified leadership for the benefit of the foundation, which is in the best interest of the foundation. It is the right thing to do. Do not hire anyone who is the Jack and Jane of all trades, but the persons of none. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful weekend.
Next person is Bob Lederer.
Good afternoon and welcome to the new board members. I'm Bob Lederer. I'm a staff representative on the WBAI LSB and a former member of this body, the PNB. And I have two urgent issues to bring to you today. One is the move that WBAI Studio has recently carried out from the $37,000 a month quarters on Wall Street to the $5,000 a month quarters at City College is a welcome and long, long overdue step towards perhaps moving towards financial stability and also getting back to our community roots. But it wasn't without struggle to get there, and I think it's important that the historical records show that when Bernard White, the former program director who's now on the LSB, brought a motion to do exactly the plan that the general manager, Berthold Reimers, has now implemented to move to cheaper short-term quarters, perhaps splitting into two different units if necessary, in order to save the finances. It was hollered and hooted down and voted down by the board majority. And now that plan is unfolding. And it was due to the intervention of Nia Bediako, who just spoke, that the location was found at City College and that connection was made and that the station can move forward. Going forward on that, I just want to say that there is still from Berthold no plan shared with the board or the staff, let alone the listeners, as to how we're going to work past the six-month first contract at City College and the 6 months of free office space down in World Financial Center. We need a plan to for sustainability of the space. Now I want to move to the most serious existential threat to WBI at this moment, which is the lawsuit commenced by the Empire State Building that houses our antenna at least 3 months ago, that is not merely seeking non-payment of rent, which I understand may be as much as 4 months, $200,000 in back rent, but actually it's called a holdover proceeding. It's seeking eviction. Permanent eviction of WBAI from that antenna. And the fact that only because Nia became apprised of this, Nia Bediako, and made this public and brought it to the local board and the national board's attention, that we even know that it was filed, let alone what steps management is taking to address it. And I think that's really unconscionable, that it's a matter of public record. It should have been brought forward, both so the boards could assist the manager in trying to resolve this issue, and also to alert the listeners who have repeatedly been generous and forthcoming in a time of crisis. To this moment, the listeners have not ever been told on the radio that this action is pending and that it could mean the end to WBAI as we know it. This is an extreme emergency. It needs to be all hands on deck. There needs to be an emergency staff meeting. There needs to be an on-air forum, and there needs to be some joint planning so we can move forward together to stabilize the station.
Thank you. Next speaker is Frank Lefevre.
I'm Frank Lefevre. I'm a recently elected member of WBAI's local station board. I'm going to give you just a soundbite right now. If anybody wants a deeper treatment with more details and specificity of the plans I have for BAI's promotion, contact me at helpfixwbai@yahoo.org. I'm asking now... .com, yahoo.com. Yes, everybody knows that. Well, maybe not everybody. It's a pretty elderly board we have here. Some almost as old as me. I'm 81, almost 82. I'm asking, how is it possible that Amy Goodman is better known to the general public than the radio station from which she started? Now, I know what I'm talking about because I gave out hundreds and hundreds of handbills promoting BAI at anti-war marches and anti-police brutality marches and various leftish activist progressive things. And the most common response was, WBAI, what's that? I said, well, it's a radio station. I said, among other things, it broadcasts Democracy Now. Oh, yes, Democracy Now, yes. That they recognize. Their eyes lighted up. Now, how is that possible? Well, simply because Amy has the sense to promote and publicize and advertise herself, which is something that no management and no governing body in Pacifica in the past 10 years has had the wit to do. BAI could be a cash cow for the entire Pacifica network, as well as a significant voice in the main metropolitan center in America, if the cost of the antenna and transmitter were not seen as a weight dragging us down, but as an investment to be followed by a further investment at serious advertising and promotion to get an audience. We cannot sustain ourselves on word of mouth. We're losing people just by dying from old age year by year, as well as drifting away and moving on to greener pastures and so forth. Word of mouth just ain't going to cut it in the 21st century. You've got to get your ass out there and advertise the damn place.
Thank you. Jim Brown?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm Jim Brown from WPFW, former board member and former LSV member. You've heard many of us, many members from the station, talk about the fear and the confusion at the station. A lot of that has to do with a lack of information and a lack of understanding of what is happening to our station. We formed a group called a committee members to support WPFW. These are all community members, and there's over about 500 of them. And one of the reasons we did that was to make sure that we started to energize our community to the point where they can help support the station. We don't have a clear understanding of a lot of the reasons why a lot of the things that are happening at the station are happening. We have serious technical problems that we feel are going to somehow affect our FCC standing. We think that there are FCC violations, and we do have the support of many, many community people who are willing to come in and help with those problems. The main thing that really hampers us is the fact that we do not have any flowing information from the station that will allow people to understand what's going on. Our community is in uproar. They think that they're going to lose the station because they don't have enough information. They're left to think about things rather than know facts. The facts are not there. And so we are looking at a reason for a reason to help the station, but we don't know how sometime to do that because we don't have enough information to really, really get involved. Now, our involvement is based on what we know. We have some very skilled people, some very knowledgeable people in that committee who are really working hard to try and save WPFW. And with that, we believe that you guys from this side can help set some policies that will help us in terms of doing what we want to do to save our station. And my last question to you is, what each one of you, what will you do as an individual on this board to help increase the financial situation at your station and at this network? What will you do? Think about what you would do as a person to help do this.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Saul McCabs?
Good afternoon, board members.
Good afternoon.
Fellow comrades and counter-revolutionaries in the room. And I know there are plenty of counter-revolutionaries in the room, because what I've witnessed and seen with BAI's transmitter, this is CAI's wet dream come true. The signal has been threatened. The community has been threatened, along with the way the program changes have also helped threaten that community. Many in this room at this table have helped assist with it and now you're at it. And all I see in reference to on websites is people arguing about parking spaces, not dealing with what's going on. Okay, I take this very seriously. Fundraising. In order to get fundraising, you have to have the trust of the people. I'm going to give you a vision. Okay? That trust has been seriously, seriously violated. You've lied to the public. Numerous times you've been told that the station was solvent, and now you got holdover actions. Those don't come overnight. Okay? I don't know what's going on with the mic, but anyway, bottom line, let's look at this. I'm going to give you a vision that happened. During Obama's campaign, there was an old woman that handed him $5 because that was trust. That $5 was worth more than any $100, $1,000 campaign contribution because it was that kind of value coming from the community of color, which many of you turned down, bam, you know, just said, forget about it, and I won't use the F word, but basically that's the way you've acted about it. We used to have things called layaway plans, and I used to do that on the air, get people to pay who were willing to pay because it had something meaningful. Not 12 CDs saying, you know, forget your problems and feel good. Because police brutality, me telling me forget my what I got whacked on the head or I got shot at, it's not going to make me feel any better as a black person, as a black man, facing stop and frisk. But this is the nonsense we've got going on even on this late premium thing, okay? The Gary Knowles situation. You've hawked plenty of premiums that weighed damn near 20 pounds. He stuck you with the shipping. He shafted the listeners, and he shafted us. Yet I hear ignorant people still call for him, who are stuck in a yoga position that have basically got their head stuck up a biological hole. And that's shameful, because they're choking off their brain cells. There's also a gentleman in here who's a brethren who I see from the paper bag factory, who we know is the post office, for those who don't know. I used to work in the post office. My father was vice president of a postal union called the National Alliance, something of labor history you won't hear. Why? Because the fact is a lot of people are too young to remember what the National Alliance was, and when I called in to correct the person who was a union leader of New York who had their history wrong, you were censoring people off the air so that wrongful history and lies were further to go off. That was the black unions that were basically dealt a dirty deal in 1971. My father was a postmaster, the first black postmaster of Jersey City. So I know what I'm talking about. And it's shameful what's going on here and allowed to go on. And in reference to art, there's not enough of black artists being dealt with. You got a lot of Nazi music on Sunday mornings. I even see ABC now has a program dedicated to Nazism. I see that one more thing, and I'm going to close on this. Okay. In reference to the feminine public and feminism, I don't see anybody complaining about this murder of a female, but I saw a whole lot of calling for the noose for O.J. Simpson. Very Eurocentric. Mm-hmm. Think about that.
Thank you.
Isn't somebody get killed in South Africa?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, now you wake up. Oh.
Pete Tucker is next.
No calls for an equal opportunity and so on.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Pete Tucker. I'm vice chair of WPFW's local station board, and I've been elected twice to that position. A lot has been said regarding WPFW, and I'd like to say a bit more. Beginning with the move. WPFW has for 2 years now attempted to find a home, and that's not easy to do, and it's particularly difficult when we do find a place, as we have, and we go to sign it. They say, well, it's at Pacifica, even though WPFW is moving, it's Pacifica that signs the lease. They say, well, we're looking at Pacifica's finances, and there's a going concern. They say, "We, you know, going concern in auditor's terms means you might not be here 6 months from now. And so over the past 2 years, we have tried and tried and gotten turned down because of that. Now, despite that, we have found a place, one that will save us more than $5,000 in rent, and one that has additional savings because it's already built out, so that's at least $100,000 in upfront. And yes, it is a sublease from Clear Channel. Now, I grew up in a newspaper family an hour north of here and sold to Gannett and watched the paper get skinnier and skinnier and close down. I'm very aware of media consolidation. If it was our first choice, no, this is not our first choice, but we're not in a first choice position right now. We are in desperate straits. Having tried time and again, and now, despite the fact there's a going concern on Pacifica's finances, we are able to secure a place. The only reason we're not moving, haven't moved in yet, is because another speaker mentioned earlier, there are other concerns that Pacifica has to deal with if we are going to successfully move. So our general manager, I'm coming 2 years ago, has found a place that we can move into. Also, another speaker pointed out that there are serious concerns about listenership. This is something that affects network-wide, but WPFW, too, over the last 10 years, we've lost 1 in 3 listeners. Now, the general manager's been here 2 years. We have 10 years of decline. And yet, if you make any program changes, you're against the community. I'm not saying that everything was perfect. It was not. It was not handled well, and there have been major rollbacks. But we've got to get to a place where we can generally manage the station, because at the end of the day, if the ship is sinking, if it's hit the iceberg and you're taking out water, and you say, but you can make no changes, but you're responsible for the direction it's going, where does this thing end up? So there's a campaign against the general manager, and we can cut his head off, and we can cut the next person's head off, and we seem to just be rolling heads down the aisle every couple months and then say, why doesn't anyone want to put any real investment into Pacifica? Well, who wants to do that? We've got to get to a place where, look, we can criticize a specific action without firing everybody, destabilizing the leadership, and then wondering why we are a broke network. We can do better than this. And lastly, I would say, it was also pointed out, you know, there's been a revolution when it comes to how people communicate. No one under 35 really listens to the radio. And Pacifica's got to get with it when it comes to Facebook and Twitter. This is major. This is absolutely major. Mm-hmm. And we've missed the ball on that. Thank you very much for your
time.
Thank you.
William H.
Hello, William Hairwagon from WBAI again. Thank you for the financial reports, the first quarter financial reports. It's the first one I've seen since sometime maybe last spring or something. We don't get any reports. I'm on the finance committee, as a half a dozen other people in this room are for WBAI. We don't get reports. We never even got one for September 30th. You know, the last CFO said, oh, we can't do it because the audit isn't finished. But obviously you can. And I knew that all along. Some of you may have. We don't have a balance sheet, though. You know, there's a multitude of sins hidden in balance sheet. We need those balance sheets. We can't just work with operating statements. And I think we should have one before this meeting adjourns on Monday. New audit report was mentioned. I don't know. Is the audit report anywhere near done from the outside auditor? I don't know the answer to that. This is about the normal time of year you'd get one. Last year we didn't get it till June or July. And actual real reports that I ever see usually come only from the auditor's report. I don't get any from our finance committee, very rarely. And we haven't met since October. Let's see. One of the earlier speakers, David, right behind me, said something about the program director ruining everything. I'd like to remind you that program director came with Grace Aaron, who is the, I don't know, friend of, or the predecessor, let's say, to Summer. And the new person that came to New York to help used to do a show with, or did a fundraising with the same person that became our program director, who never had program director experience and decimated our schedule. So, I don't know. It's not similar to what happened in D.C., but hey, this is a trend. It's not a good trend. We need real management, like somebody else said. Spanish language was mentioned. I thought that a year and a half ago, roughly, maybe a little less, we revived the Spanish language through Mr. Argueto, who's no longer on the board. That was done years earlier. But people like Alex Steinberg, who's in the room, said, oh, no, we don't need that. We don't have to have that. And somebody said the motion that was been rescinded. I hadn't heard that it's been rescinded. I hope it's not. I hope somebody will stand up and say, yes, we need that Spanish language programming. And we have it as a starter. Every station could do their own. But Fernando's show, Informativo Pacifica, could be on every station and should be at a good, proper time. Thank you.
Thank you. Verna Avery Brown.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Verna Avery Brown. I'm a programmer at WPFW. Have a 25-year history with the network, doing everything from volunteering to deputy executive director of the network. I first want to thank you all for observing the democratic process and voting our delegation to be seated. Thank you very much. We sincerely appreciate that. I want to talk a little bit about the Clear Channel issue because, as one of my colleagues just said, you know, it would be like it's that we are in desperate straits and we need to. But many of us feel as though, even though that's a really colorful, clever analogy of heads rolling down the aisle, here's another something to consider: Pacifica and WPFW climbing into bed with the devil. Because that's the way we see any kind of association with Clear Channel and WPFW and Pacifica. I mean, that is not just some corporation. That's an extreme white right-wing corporation that we don't need to be associated with on any level. We really don't. And we need to, we need to keep in mind the fact that if we're subletting to them, we would be beholden to them. They could do also, if we're late on our rent, you know, there's just no telling. So giving up, you know, some $5,000, saving that in rent would be just like financing our own demise. Because first of all, once our listeners hear that there's an association, and many of them have already said this, they are not going to continue to give their money to be ultimately given to a Clear Channel or corporation. I want to also say we've basically been abandoned by our general manager. He's been out on sick leave for a number of weeks. He's refused to return the grid, even though the LSB voted to have that done. He's refused to do it. We had a CMS town hall meeting. Over 500 people attended. The community wants that grid returned. We know it has to be tweaked, but it also has to be returned. He's completely circumvented the process in the selection of our program director. Not only that, the program director was ultimately fired. We don't have an operations director. We don't have a program director. You know, we don't have an engineer. The station is falling apart at the seams. And then you can hear it on the air. The staff is working at three-quarters salary, and this isn't even the whole staff. This is a selected few. The union representatives somehow were targeted to have their salaries cut, and the LSB actually passed something saying that this should be addressed and that our general manager should also participate in that salary cut, which he has refused to do. And, you know, I don't know how that jives with social justice, but I think in most of our books, it does not.
Thank you, Verna. Your time is up.
Okay, let me just make this one statement. Our station should be the flagship station of the network and very well could be. Right now, it's looking more like the Titanic, and we need your assistance in saving WPFW.
Thank you. Jane Zara.
Good afternoon again. Thanks for hearing me again. I know I was on yesterday. I wanted to thank whoever organized this, you all, for bringing Bob Fosse last night. It was a wonderful documentary. I love it. I hope we can rejuvenate his spirit and his work, and that membership will roll in. And I hope that we in WPFW can also sponsor a screening of that movie when it comes back to D.C. I think it's an opportunity that we can't avoid. Okay. I just wanted to talk a few points, some of which were mentioned yesterday and some to clarify. First, about the Clear Channel demise. I was glad that Pete Tucker came up to talk about it, but I want to review his narrative right now because it's illustrative. All of the information that he revealed today has never been revealed to the board. It's never been revealed to the board as a body, the LSB, as a body. We've never been able to discuss it. There's never been discussion with memberships or the LSB as an entire board about what the possibilities were for landlords. The way we found out about Clear Channel, having anything to do with the property, people went out at night and found the building on their own, and we did research on it. This is not transparency. It's not democracy, and it was not a functional board that started that process. We are working toward it now, and it's very hard. But if you understand the narrative, Pete Tucker said he spoke for we. I don't know who we is with the officers that were on the last board. I have no idea who we is, and the board as it exists now still wants to find out. So please note that. I want to also address a couple problems that are indicative of our demise. The station, the conditions at the station literally are crumbling. We have a buzzer that doesn't work. Programmers have to run down in the middle of their program to let guests in. Okay. We also have elders. You know, our meetings sometimes run 5 to 7 hours. I feel like I'm in Congress now. And at 1 a.m, you know, my husband came to look for me. I was in a board meeting. Okay. Oh, he rang the buzzer, and he went around with the cab because, of course, I was engrossed and I couldn't talk to him. He thought the meeting was out. He was looking for bodies for me because he thought I was on my way home, and it was 1 a.m. There are elders that stand outside that need to get in, that stand in the dark. And if you hang out where PFW is, it's not a very dangerous neighborhood, but it's not the best neighborhood to have to wait to be let in. So I think that is a pretty literal and graphic example of how things are crumbling. And the harm in terms of whether Clear Channel owns the building or not, that is not the case. As other people mentioned, we will be beholden to them. If there's an 8-year no exit clause, we will be beholden to them for probably up to $1 million if we are in arrears in rent. And I would hate to go down that path. Members have already threatened to disavow if we're in any affiliation with Clear Channel. It's a real threat to the very existence of PFW. So I implore you to start the transparent process, allow the LSB to function as a functional board, bring in the members. People are looking around for candidate places now. There's hysteria. We call the FCC to see if a 10-day letter has been submitted. That's how desperate we are for information. So please, please try to start helping us with transparency and democracy.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ola Golo? Ola.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
I've since discovered by joining the LSB that being a board member can be somewhat of a thankless task. And I'm sure that you're feeling that way already, being on the PNB. What's interesting about being on a board, of course, is that you're not engaged as professionals in the sense that you're not engaged to perform legal work or accounting work or anything else like that. You're engaged to actually act in the best interest of the organisation. And that is a capacity in which I'm actually addressing you here today. As you can hear from my accent, I'm not from these parts. But I love New York City. I'm here to talk about PFW. It's a story of a station with a lot of heart. It's a story of a station that called itself the Jazz and Justice Station, the Messenger. And the underlining principles of both jazz and justice is integrity. And the thing about integrity is either you have it or you don't. One of the things that happened last year, around November, is I had someone from London come in the car, and I turned on the station because I just thought, this is PFW, the station I've been telling you about. I absolutely love this station. I love this station. She was listening to a talk show for the first time. She said, my goodness, she said, if only we could get this in London. This is the sign of America, the face of America that we don't get to see. We get to see everything else, but we don't get to see this story about America that has heart, that understands international issues, that understands justice. And so, as she turned on, listened to this station and listened to this show, at the end of it, he announced, and today will be my last show. I will not be coming back. And she started screaming. She said, I don't understand. I just heard something which I don't get to hear in London. Why is he off the air now? And as the story unfolded, more and more people became taken off the air. The manner that it happened was so horrific. I've never witnessed anything like that in any country that I've ever been in. Ever. And I found it ironic that this happens in a so-called Pacifica Jazz and Justice station. I was encouraged when every member who was sitting on the board who's in this room today, it was Lizette King, Tony Norman, Pete Tucker, and please Benito Diaz, voted 19-2 to approve a motion which condemned the process through which the PFD general manager developed and implemented the recent massive programming changes and strongly recommended that the GM immediately restore the programming grid. All of those board members voted on that in December. We're here in February. We've seen a tide of listener supporters leave the station. Jazz artists, well known, who can't turn on the station anymore. They said, where's the jazz in the jazz station?
Thank you. Your time is up.
Let's hope PFW's time isn't up as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kathy Davis.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Kathy Davis. I'm the Public Affairs Director at WBAI and formerly a member of this body, very gratefully to be on this side at this time, because I know how difficult this struggle is. It's a real difficult negotiation that takes place on these boards. So I just wanted to wish all of you a great deal of luck and hope that you'll be more successful than I in coming together in some form of understanding from one side of the aisle to the other. But really, I wanted to take an opportunity to thank some WBAI people, our listeners, who really come forward again and again to support WBAI. And I just wanted to put out there my gratitude to that. And I also wanted to thank the people. I'll thank Nia for getting that space up in Harlem and WHCR. They've been the most accommodating and lovely people I've ever known. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know a radio station could be like this. People are actually nice. and so I was just thinking that it would be really useful if we could find a way not to make every opinion one of attack. I mean, I really, you know, I know people criticize my premiums because I'm in this, you know, infinite possibility kind of thing. That's my thing. But I think if we could look at the situation in a real way and not attack each other in that, we might be able to get ahead. I think where we lose ground is where we attempt to destroy each other, attack each other. And I'm not saying I'm clean. You know, I've been on this board for a long time. I've been drawn into this behavior. I've acted out of fear and thinking that somebody was going to harm or attack me. I'm not saying that I'm, you know, it's not a judgmental call. I'm just saying that it's my hope that we can get to a point where we can function without that. And truthfully, I don't think that this board system works. I don't think Robert Rules works. I think it was designed to obstruct, and we need to get rid of Robert's Rules. I don't think these boards work. I think we should dispense with it and do something like Occupy Wall Street and just let everybody participate in the decision-making process. Thank you.
Thank you. And the last speaker is Parika Edwards.
Good afternoon. My name is Farika Edwards. I am a producer at WBAI. I produce the Artsy Fartsy Show. And I just want to say I really love WBAI. Every month, I have a limited income. And every month to produce my radio program, I put $150 to $200 into my programming just to produce it. I don't have any advertisement. My radio program, the promos have never, ever played, and it's 2.5 years of being on air. With that said, It's an arts program. It's based on my passion that art should be accessible to everybody. I grew up in the Midwest. I was the only person of color all the way, even up to, through college, that was involved in arts. And I had to fight throughout that experience to justify my my presence in arts, my presence in being able to do plays that are. I had to talk to my teachers about doing colorblind casting. My parents are artists, and they have also experienced this divide. Art has become kind of this new segregation. Not so much, though. Let me just tell you. Art is bursting at the seams. It's multifaceted. It's using science. It's using technology. It's using engineering. It's using politics, of course. And it's relating to the new way of communicating. Art is more interactive than ever before, and it's performing with the audience. Thus, that's why I created the Artsy Fartsy Show. And not only that, we don't just do programming online. My program, we are out in the community. This is also why I love WBAI, because we are in the community. We've worked with the New York International Fringe Festival. We do concerts. But I want to bring one point up. My main point is we need to change in the areas of how we distribute WBAI and all the networks. I had 13-year-olds 5 years ago listen to the radio program on that was going on live through the internet, and they said, I don't like the sound. It sounds unclear. 13-year-olds, this way we listen has changed. They're so attuned to digital sound. According to the Arbitron Edison research, majority of people are listening to radio online. People in my age group, 25 to 45, are digesting radio online. Radio has gone up. This is not the end of radio. We're not going the way of newspapers, by the way. People are digesting radio more than ever before. So it's incredibly important that we get online and be accessible. We have some podcast apps, but there's like the one major podcast app that's out there. And we can go to all the apps, and have our own app, but we kind of need to be on that main app. Also, my demographic is multicultural people who are ages 18 to 45 for my radio program. Okay, I have no more time, but I have, if you want to get some of the research that I have that's based from 2008 to now and how internet is so important, you can email me at barika@wbai.org. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to all the members of the public. We actually were in public comment for closer to an hour and a half, hour 20 minutes roughly. So, yes, I'm sorry. Manashe?
Having listened to all the comments of the public, I really think that we can reduce anxiety or help clarify some of the issues that were being raised if we have the public comments after the reports. Meaning, then I mean that we have to have the reports, however we do early on in, you know, at the meeting, and then let the public comment after the reports are given. So some of the things that have not been clear has not been communicated, because we have, from my experience at BAI, the communication is antithetical to the processing at these stations that are all about communication. We are living totally the different life that we are supposed to be promoting. So I would really encourage, because I hear a lot of anxiety and a lot of concern that could be. I'm not sure that if they are going to be addressed by public report, but it would be better off if they are under the report, so some of the answers can be given and people can comment on things that they have some information about with reference to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Manager.
Oh, that would be great.
Thank you.
I second that. Thank you, Mitch.
And some of the issues some members of the public raise need to be addressed sometimes in executive session at their local boards as well, obviously, since frequently those are the issues.